I love that. You
got boom, boom. I'm over here. Just, you know how it is. The people over here, they see me.
Glad he's not in the choir. That's what they're saying.
You can tell. But boy, you all are such a blessing. Such a blessing. So I'm probably going to end up, I'm going to start here, but I'm going to end up there because I've got some things going on and I need to do that. But it's so funny. Sometimes when you're working on a sermon, you think, oh, this is the way I'm going to start and this is the way it's going to work. And so I was going to talk about the Lenten devotional booklets. You know how you all been reading those Lenten devotional booklets? You get them online or you have the paper copy and they're really good. And so because today is Sharon Thompson's birthday, and I had her devotion deliberately planned to be on her birthday, and I was going to talk about Sharon's devotion, and I was going to come over here and talk to the choir about it. Right there was Sharon, except for Sharon's not here. And so then, all right, well then forget. And then I was going to talk about Jonathan, because Jonathan's devotion is going to be this Wednesday on Caitlin's birthday, and I deliberately put his devotion on her birthday. He mentions her in his devotion, and I thought, well, that'd be really a nice way to talk about it, you know? And then that would be a nice little way to segue, and then I was going to talk about Brian Kelly's devotion this past Friday, all right? And Brian's not here either. And so all of a sudden, you're thinking, maybe God's not directing me as much as I thought, you know? Because I wanted to talk about it, because if you read the Friday devotion, you know Brian talks about the obstacle course running and how much he likes that, and he talks about the Spartan running and how much he likes all that, and then that got me to thinking about the marathon, because that's a different type of a Greek race, and it got me thinking about that, because some of you know this, some of you know the legend about this with Pheidippides and all of that, way back in 490 B.C., I graduated from high school then. I remember. And what had happened was this Persian army, all right, was coming into Greece. And this Persian army is massive, all right. And they land, all right, they land on the plain of Marathon. That was the name of the plain, all right. So the Persians land in Greece on this plain of Marathon to conquer Athens. Athens just 25 miles away. All right? And they have a tiny little puny army, okay? They got like Barney Fife, okay? Going against the Rock, okay? And all of that happens, but an unbelievable thing happened, all right? The Athenian army won. They beat the Persians. It's kind of like a Miami Dolphin victory. Nobody saw it coming. Nobody thought it could be possible. And then what does that do? It fills people with joy. And they're running with joy. They're just like, this is great. And they appoint Pheidippides, all right? And they appoint him and they said, go tell the city, because they don't know. They don't have cell phones. They don't get good coverage. And so he runs 25 miles, not stopping at Starbucks, not getting an energy, nothing. He runs all the way there to tell the people he loves so much. And he goes in and he runs into the city hall and says, rejoice, we won. And then he collapsed and died. Now, in the legend that is way more fable than fact, all right, that's the way that story goes. But the poet Robert Browning said, he died with a smile on his face, all right, that it wasn't from exhaustion, you know, it was the ecstatic joy he felt about telling people he loved so much, such great news. We won. We won. That's what Paul's talking about, how we win, like the battle marathon, God's victory. One, in Jesus Christ, is the kind of news that sets people running. See, Paul likens his life to being in a marathon as a runner, straining forward, forgetting what lies behind, looking forward, focusing on what lies ahead. I press on, he says, toward the prize of the heavenly call of God in Jesus Christ. And that Greek word that gets translated in our Bibles is press on. The Greek word is dioko.
Don't you love it when you go to church and you hear a Greek word and you just, oh, wow, dioko, because I showed you all a different Greek word a while back and don't use that one. But the dioko one, you can use that word, all right? And it has the connotation not just of pressing on. It has the connotation of a chase. And it has the connotation of a pursuit, of even hunting down. Because if you know, if you remember with Paul, and he talks about his history, all right, he has been hunting down the followers of Jesus. He's been hunting them down for a long time. He was trying to exterminate them. For those of you who are fans of Moby Dick, all right, he was like the Ahab persecutor, prosecutor, convictor of the church, okay? He was on a safari, and he was trying to bag Christians and take them off to jail for their wrong-headed ideas, because he was defending God. That was serious business, and he was after it. He was after it. During his lifetime, Paul had been running hard toward a different prize. He wanted to be a religious success. He wanted to be holy. He wanted to be good. He trained hard. And by outward appearances, he had succeeded. Earlier in the passage that Diana read, he went through some of his spiritual resume. Circumcised on the eighth day after his birth. What does that mean? He says, I wasn't no convert. I was born into the people of God. Of the tribe of Benjamin. What does that mean? It means I'm a pure blood. I'm a blue blood. Who was the first king of Israel? Saul. What tribe did he come from? Benjamin. All right. You want to show credentials? I'll show you my credentials. I am a Hebrew of Hebrews. What does that mean? It means I speak the native language. I speak the tongue. And on and on and on he goes. He's a member of the Phi Beta Pharisaic Honor Society. And then Jesus. You may remember how Jesus and Paul met. Paul was on his way to Damascus, continuing his hunting down, his Ahab-like quest. And all of a sudden, Christ just knocks him down. Remember that? Strikes him blind. And in his blindness and in his weakness, Paul is cared for by one of Jesus' followers named Ananias. And Paul comes to a whole new understanding of Jesus and realizes that he's been running all this time for the wrong prize. He's been running in the wrong direction. Back in 1964, when I first came here, that was a joke. How old do you guys think I am? Oh, my land.
31.
I'm 7. Today's the 7th. But back in 1964, there was a National Football League game. The Minnesota Vikings playing the San Francisco 49ers. See, we got Minnesota over here, got San Francisco over here. Jim Marshall, defensive lineman, big, burly, one of the purple people eaters, picks up the fumble. The 49er receiver, wimpy guy, had dropped the ball. Jim Marshall picks it up, and he starts running as only a defensive lineman can run. Just run 60 yards of daylight. No red uniforms in his way. And there he is with his purple helmet and his purple pants and his white jersey. And he's running. And the crowd is roaring. And on the sidelines, he sees his teammates waving their arms. And he's just got dances of dreams in his head. He's scoring a defensive lineman getting ready to score a touchdown. And he gets to the end zone. And he gets up in the end zone. He made it. And he takes the ball and he just throws it up in the stands. He does. And a guy in a red uniform, the opposing team, runs up to Marshall and gives him a hug. And at that moment, Jim's eyes were opened. And he realized he had just run 60 yards in the wrong direction. He had not scored a touchdown for his team. He had scored 2 points for the other team. If you ever watch the replay, you can hear the TV announcer saying, "He's running the wrong way. He's running the wrong way. Jim Marshall is running the wrong way." The crowd, everybody on the stadium, everybody watching on TV, his own sideline, everybody knew Jim Marshall was running the wrong way, except for
Jim Marshall.
Paul realizes he has been running the wrong way. He had reached the end zone. He had been successful, but his were the empty victories that kind of leave you defeated in the end. Christ knocked Paul down. Ananias gave him a hug. And Paul's eyes were open. Open to the truth. Paul had always thought that God's law pointed in one direction and Jesus pointed in another direction. But now that he realized that the Christ wasn't the enemy of the law, he was the fulfillment of the law. Amen. The law had been a map, but now God had sent a faithful guide in Jesus, who embodied the flesh, what life with God was all about, and who made it available to all people. And all people meaning all people. The law, the map, that was something outside of Paul. But now Jesus was inside of Paul. Christ was alive and living in and through him. Christ lived in and within and through people and enabled them to be and to do what they could never do on their own. Men and women who were fulfilled because they had the heart and the mind of Jesus. Paul discovered that the followers of Jesus were not the ones who were lost. Paul was. And Jesus was calling him to a new and surprising thing that God had done. And so Paul did what you do when you realize you've been going in the wrong direction. You know what you do? What do? First thing is you stop. And the second thing you do is turn around. So Paul repented. He turned around. He made a 180. Goodness was not going to be found by going against Jesus, but by following Jesus. And now Paul had a prize worth running after. He had a new focus. He had a new understanding, a new life. None of those old status symbols that he had, none of that old scoring system was going to work for him anymore. That old inventory didn't matter. It didn't matter how many committees he had served on, how many service projects he had done. What mattered now was knowing Christ and being like him. Paul discovered what we all discover. Truly knowing Jesus does not rob us of our fun, does not mean we're missing out on life. It's better than anything we can imagine. It's that pearl of great price worth all other pearls combined. And nothing more. There's something more on this. It wasn't that just Paul was running in the wrong direction. Paul was running in the wrong method, the wrong style, the wrong way. It wasn't just where he was running to, it was how he was running. Paul had believed that righteousness and goodness was something that he could achieve through hard work and dedication by his own efforts. If he just gritted his teeth, if he just tried hard enough, he would be able to succeed. Paul's vision of the race of life was this grim and grueling, guilt-racked grind where you have to justify your existence, justify your self-esteem every day. A joyless jog up a never-ending hill in cold and rain. Paul had not only been running in the wrong direction, he'd been running with the wrong method. The Tarahumara Indian tribe of Mexico, they run in a different way. They don't wear the kind of tennis shoes that we all have and everything. They're running these sandals. And they don't run kind of lean. No, they run upright. And the way the sandals are designed is so that they land on the front pad of their feet. Not on their arches, not on their heels, on the front pad of their feet. But more than that, when they run, they don't see it as a chore. They see it as a joy. And you see it on their faces. And they are able to literally run hundreds of miles. Hundreds of miles. With joy, no injury, just continuing to be able to go, no rest, because of the way that they run. They see it as a gift. There was this track coach who had gone to study them because, you know, you're all competitive. You want, these guys seem to be able to run. And so he was watching them run an ultra marathon. That's a 100-mile race. 100 miles in mountainous country. And he was watching them trying to learn about their technique and all this other stuff. But he said what he really saw. He says, they were going up the most grueling of all hills. They're just running. He says, and these two were just running. And he says, and what struck me the most wasn't their style or their stride. It was the joy on their faces. They were laughing as they were running on this grueling race uphill. They were like leaves. I mean, they were like children jumping into a pile of leaves. They just couldn't help contain the joy that they had and this freedom that they felt as they were running. That joy, that blessing, it was just that's what they had. If you've ever studied Philippians, one of the things that you're going to find in that is this kind of joy that Paul had. Paul wrote this while he was in prison. He's in prison. And yet, when you read Philippians, you see time after time, page after page, chapter after, joy, joy, joy. I've got the joy, joy, joy. That's Paul. People disparaging, doing all these terrible. He's still got joy. He's got Jesus. He's just keeping that going on. He's just pressing on, straining forward. And he's doing it now with laughter in his voice. He's running in a different way, in a different method, in a different, the whole different system. The freedom. He's running with the freedom of someone who no longer has to prove anything. Sometimes, you know, we can get lost in that. I remember, because one person that is here that I can tell a story about, right over there, Diana. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's my birthday. I can do what I want. Till we get home. This sermon's never going to end. Diana, a long time ago in Louisville, she used to watch her little nephew, Chance. Chance was about one or two, and so Chance's mom would drop her off at Diana's house, and Diana would watch him, okay? But Diana's not your normal babysitter, all right? So when Chance was always excited when he knew he was going to go to Aunt Diana's, Aunt Didi's house, Aunt Didi's house. I just can't wait to get there. I just can't wait. She would have spaghetti wars. Spaghetti wars, yes. They would have flower battles, all right? All right, Linda, her sister, would come to pick Chance up. He's covered in flour. All right, you look around the house, flour everywhere, and nothing but joy on his face. He's just totally, you know, just loving it. When our own kids were young, I remember Diana would just randomly declare, no school today. She would say, no school today. We're not going to school today. We're going to go to the park. We're going to go to the beach. We're going to go to lunch. We're going to do all this. Just randomly, just all this random joy. And yes, being a parent is serious stuff. And we have to make sure we're taking time to make sure they're responsible. And but sometimes we lose that whole moment of joy. And the freedom of expression that comes when your heart has been set free. And love has been set free. And you can do all these wonderful things. It's like a couple in there. And Nancy's looking out the window and she sees the kids in the yard and they're just tearing it all up. And she said, Fred, go out there and tell the kids to quit. And he goes, why? She says, because they're tearing up the grass. They're tearing it up. And he goes, we're not raising grass. We're raising kids. This is what it means to be a child. To love and run and laugh and have freedom and joy and to let that go. And that's what Paul's trying to get the Christians to see. Pressing on isn't about, oh, I got to continue to be righteous and good. I'm a Christian. Look at my face. It's serious business being a disciple. And we drink our, you know, prune juice and look at us. I've got joy. And no wonder people don't want what we've got. They're thanking God. Thank God I don't have what they have.
Life with God is not a battle that we conquer by gritting our teeth and trying harder. Because the marathon-like news is that God has already conquered. God has already won the battle. Christ has done for us what we cannot do for ourselves. We don't have to justify our existence anymore by our achievements and by what we accomplish. Christ's sacrifice has justified our existence. All that burden of expectation has been removed. So the race we are in, however hard that race is at this moment, it's not a grind of guilt. It's a race of grace. It's not a race for grace. It's a race of grace. It's not a grim test of our willpower or our determination. It's a joyous jaunt. Good news filling up our soul. Joy in our heart and on our faces. The good news is inside of us. It shows in our faces. And we press on. We rejoice because the Lord has won. There is victory in Jesus. And Jesus is in us. So we praise God because we've won. And so what I want you to do right now, I want you to just claim that victory. I want you to claim that victory, and I'm going to do it. We're going to do it together by claiming it in a song. Remember the song, Victory in Jesus? Do you know that song? Well, let's stand up on our feet. Let's claim that promise that God has given us, the salvation that is free, the grace that empowers our living. As we claim the victory that Jesus has given to us, let's sing Victory in Jesus.